I'm ready.
Hey guys, this is Danny Herbeck with the Musky 360 Canada edition. It's been a little while here, and once again, I finally tracked down Joe, and he took a minute from his wild and crazy adventures. Joe, what's going on, man?
Oh man, time's just flying by. You know, this winter started out kind of crawling for me. December and January seemed to take forever to get through, and now February and March have come and gone there. I mean, it's March isn't gone yet, but it sure feels like it is.
Yeah, so. Same thing. It's that January, that December, January, February is the hard part to kind of get through. And now that March has kind of rolled around, you know, we get some warm weather, a guy gets to be a little bit more mobile, the days start to fly by, and you know, we're kind of transitioning into what I would say a normal spring so far. Yeah, we've had, you know, some volatile big temperature swings going from extremely hot to extremely cold here recently. But as far as, you know, snow load on the ground, snow load on the lakes, I would say we're about normal for this time of year. Would you not?
Well, you guys have got more snow than us here. Like this last storm that was supposed to be significant for us on, what day was that? Saturday. We ended up not getting really anything here. And what little bit we did get, the wind blew it, who knows, probably about all the way to Toronto or something. But, I actually just looked up on the Water Control Board website just the other day at the lake level and outflow and everything. And, The lake is down a little bit, also we really don't have. I mean, there's a little bit of snow left on shore, but it's gone pretty quick. And there's a big difference between here and the south shore of the lake. Is pretty much all the snow's gone, unless they just got some more here today or something. But
oh yeah,
it's so I don't know. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how wet this spring is and if the water will maybe come up some. Otherwise, we might have a kind of a low water season, which would be good, I think. I mean, the water hasn't gotten warm. That was one of the things last year, was the water stayed cold because it had gone up so much. And if it stayed low this year, maybe we'll get it to warm up.
Yeah, we still got a pile of snow up here. Like, you get in the woods and you jump off the sled trail and, you know, you're up over your knee for sure in the woods where the sun's not hitting it yet. And, you know, most shorelines got, you know, snow on them, and the lake still got about 4 to 6 inches of snow, depending on what lake and where you're at and how much it got blown off. But, I mean, it's still riding snowmobiles, unfortunately. Normally I like to be truck fishing or wheeler fishing by now, but with this last dump of snow we had on Saturday there, it kind of set us back a little ways. We got probably, you know, 7-8 inches of snow, and, you know, we had a couple of probably an inch of rain prior to that. So everything's pretty slick and pretty greasy and grubby right now until we get either some colder weather or some warmer weather to kind of melt it off here.
Gosh, I would have loved to get even just a couple inches of snow on Saturday, because it's been pretty hard running out there on snowmobile since, I don't know, like the last couple of days of February there, when we had the rain and warm up. And I don't have a wheeler and can't really get around too much right now with the truck because of some of these pressure ridges that are just massive from that warm up. We got some really impressive ridges that blew up when it went from, you know, being so cold for so long to that first warm up, and they're like, you know, 8 feet tall at the low spots and totally vertical for miles. I mean,
really?
The when it happened, I was coming across from the river, and I had to go just under a mile off the trail to find a spot where I could cross with a sled. And even that, I kind of, like, you know, hopped over, you know, and would have been tough to do with anything but a snowmobile that doesn't have much on it. But we got huge ridges. So even though they haven't moved since then, you'd have to do some chopping to get over it with wheels. And so, but I got the scratchers going and bolts through the skis and everything. I got extra bogey wheels on my skid, and I'm doing everything I can to keep those Hyphax from melting off. I mean, it's the sled's got a radiator under the hood to keep it cool at least. But
yeah, it's same setup as mine. The other day there, I didn't put my scratchers down. I went for about a 12-mile ride, and I thought I was gonna everything in my sled was gonna melt off, and it got so hot.
It's crazy because I never used to put scratchers on, and never had issues with like wearing through my sliders or anything. I don't know. I mean, it was weird, but now I don't know if it's a heavier sled or what, but I seem to burn through high facts. I haven't ever burnt all the way through a slider yet. I don't know if you've ever done that. It's kind of crazy. I mean, it's.
Yeah, you're pretty well hooped.
Yeah, it starts slapping between the track.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. But to kind of kick things off for the year, I mean, we'll have to see what the weather brings. And, like, obviously we're a long ways away from open water up here yet. It kind of seems, you know, the polar opposite of what's happening down south. Like, I talked to all, you know, clients and buddies and all that down, you know, just even central Wisconsin, South Dakota. They're boat fishing already. There's no snow. It's springtime already down there, and we're a long ways away from that, so it's kind of, we'll see what Mother Nature has to bring. The next couple weeks here, looking at long range, we don't have anything wild and crazy coming weather-wise to, like, really start the thaw. I mean, it's going to stay right around that, you know, freezing mark during the day and get, you know, be down in the 18, 20 degree mark at night. So, I mean, we're going to be locking up at night and then, you know, slowly warming up during the day and then freezing again at night here for the next 2 weeks. So, we got a little ways to go anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be a slow thaw, you know, and everybody gets so excited for that rainy river to open up in the spring and go, you know, try and get on walleyes before the season closes on Minnesota or April 14th or whatever. And then, of course, the sturgeon fishing has gotten super popular. But, you know, like looking at the lake level forecast, it's about normal for this time of year. And the lake is expected to go up about, you know, another 2 inches over the next week. But the outflow is really low. I think it's at its minimum. And so, anyways, that river is probably going to be slow to open as well. I think I don't know if it's going to be open out to the bay yet for walleye guys and stuff, but yeah, that's kind of the first chance to get in the boat around here, at least, is to go get in the Rainy River and screw around. And
yeah, usually I look forward to that. We're kind of on the Canada side; they don't necessarily push the launches open like they do on the Minnesota side for the boys, so we're. A lot of times we're forced to run little skiffs across the ice to get out and stuff like that, or break the, we don't have the landings on the Canada side. And, but I usually try and get down every year and do it. I really look forward to it. But like I said, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I know it's opened up, you know, a little ways going up towards, the rapids and stuff like, the Manitou, and I don't know. There's some open water coming down, but it's pretty slow moving. And, but yeah, it's funny how pumped up guys are to get down there with a skid steer or a front end loader or something and push that ice off the landing so they can start sliding their boats in. And
yeah.
I grew up right on the banks of the river there. And, you know, the resorts used to shut down like April 1st, all the resorts would close and they wouldn't open up again until mid-May or beginning of May there, and they started pushing that Rainy River bite, and yeah, everybody from the Midwest seems like it comes up and hits the Rainy River at some point.
It's a pretty popular spot now. I remember when I started doing it, it wasn't very busy, and now you get out there on the weekends, and it kind of reminds me of fishing the Fox River down. Yeah. I mean, it gets pretty popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's lots of fish to go around, that's for sure. I mean, I've had 100 fish days out there with 10 or 12, 30 inchers. Like, if you hit it right, it can be a pretty phenomenal fishery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the last times that I really went out and hit it hard, this was quite a few years ago now, but I think we had something like 50 fish over, I don't know, 25 inches or something like that. I wish I could remember. It was an unbelievable day, but
yeah.
No, but yeah, I don't really get out on the river too much anymore, I guess. I kind of chase the ice north, and then by the time I get back from wherever I'm at, I got like a couple days to get the boat ready and then start taking clients out. So
yeah. But no, talking about clients and, you know, the season upcoming, obviously, you know, everybody's been watching the news and what's going on here with, you know, potential border stuff and the tariffs and all this and that. And, it's kind of, you know, kind of a nerve wracking time a little bit as a guide up here, you know, relying on, you know, Americans coming across the border and, you know, putting food on my table here. So we'll have to kind of see what develops with that.
Yeah, the uncertainty kind of is flashbacks of COVID shutdowns, you know, and that was really tough. You know, the community I live in, of course, got across the border two times to get here and two times to leave. And it's like we really are dependent on border relations going smoothly. And that's as so far, everything's been, you know, business as usual when we're crossing, but I have been getting a lot of questions on it. Like, you know, the Canadians aren't happy with what's going on here, understandably so. And it, you know, I really rely on things going smoothly at that border crossing for my clients to come up and even just, I mean, for me to just go get groceries even is gotta, so. Hopefully things get straightened out here and everybody's as cool as they were before all this.
Yeah, from clients that have been crossing here recently that I've been talking to and everything, it seems like it's business as usual. Nobody's getting harassed about anything like that or anything like that. So as of now, there's really nothing to worry about. And I really, honestly, I don't think the way things are going to go, they're not going to be harassing just your average vacationer coming up. It's not the way this is designed, isn't to really harass the average guy crossing the border to go on vacation for a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. It's not, I mean, it's not their jobs to harass people or anything like, and most of the border agents actually in the border crossings live in border communities where they have to cross the border themselves to go get supplies, groceries and gas and whatever. Cause there just really isn't those facilities where they're at just over the border on the Canadian side. So, you know, I think, but, you know, it's, Canadians are very proud to be Canadians and I don't think they like saying, you know, hearing that, they're going to try and become a 51st state, which is, you know, it's like a whole nother level of ridiculousness, all of it. But, yeah, so.
Yeah, it's definitely weighing heavy right now. Hopefully they can come to some sort of resolution on it here shortly. And we can keep going, as business as usual here, right? So.
Yeah. Yep. But I know that I'm still getting everything ready here. Actually, my boat is still in Texas getting warranty work done. So I haven't got any updates on it. You know, it had some issues from manufacturing that they've been trying to work out now for like the last four winters. They've taken it back and keep slapping Band-Aids on it. But I'll be running that same boat probably. Won't have much new equipment on it. I guess I have been kind of eyeing up some of these transducer poles that go over side of the boat that are, you know, maybe try and be a little more convenient with that. I got to put some gunnel rails on the boat, stuff like that. But there's really nothing ground breaking that I'm going to be doing to my boat. And as long as I get it back, that would be nice.
Yeah. Well, you know what the main problem with that boat you're running?
It's too badass.
You're running it. That's why it keeps having to go back to the factory.
If there's one thing I'm good at, it's being hard on equipment. I mean, I know how to break stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm actually pretty excited here too. I got a new boat coming. It's actually being rigged right now as we speak. And, no, I think it's going to be a pretty wicked rig. I made the switch this year. I went to all, all Hummingbird units, the new Explorer units, they seem pretty good with the new mapping that's built right in, so you don't have to buy a Lake Master chip or anything like that.
Oh, and, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the nice thing, you know, why a lot of people are always so hesitant to make the switch is, you know, from going from Lowrance to Garmin, Lowrance to Hummingbird, or vice versa, or however you want to do it, you used to have to, like, format your chip to make it compatible for each unit. Well, that Explorer unit is compatible with any graph. You take your waypoints out of, like, my Lowrance, I punch them in that new Explorer, it automatically accepts the waypoints.
Nice. Yeah, because that was a big thing for me when I went from Hummingbird to Garmin. Well, actually, I even originally had a Lowrance way back, but I had to download some computer program. GPS utility, and manually transfer all those files from a GXE to a, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, and sometimes they don't transfer too smoothly, so that's awesome. That was one thing I liked about my Garmins, was that they transferred easily.
Yeah, that was always my concern, because I always was a Lowrance guy, and then switching to Hummingbird, a lot of times they were saying when you were reformatting your card, you would lose waypoints, and I was just always so skeptical of it. Now, Hummingbird seemed to get that figured out, and it's just simple as plugging your old chip, and you're ready to rock and roll. So, no, the new Explorer units look pretty foolproof, pretty badass. Well, there's a lot of cool things you can do on them. A lot of waypoint management type stuff where you can, you know, physically circle a group of waypoints, download them to your phone, and I can send them to you, and then you can put them on your unit type stuff. There's a lot of really cool stuff you can do with them. So they kind of seem, you know, a step above here with that type of stuff. So we'll see how that goes. And
you get one of the new trolling, one of the new Minn Kotas.
Yeah, I got that new, I'm running the Altera Quest. I ran one last year. That thing was an absolute beast. Not one problem with it the whole year. I fished with it from opener to close and never had one issue with it. Those new Quests are pretty dialed in as well.
And that one's brushless and everything too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you ran brushless, the Garmin, right? But you can notice the difference from going from one of your old non-brushless trolling motors to a brushless one, especially like how much closer and how much closer you could get to fish without them actually knowing you're around.
No interference on the sonar too, which is really nice.
Yeah. So that's something to think about too when you are looking for trolling motors. That brushless is definitely the way to go.
So much more efficient, man. With paired up with lithium batteries, a brushless trolling motor can go like a week without being charged easily. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
I would fish sun up till sundown. You know, I ran Dakotas in my boat, and I'd fish sun up till sundown, plug the trolling motor in, and it would be like 80%.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen mine go below 70% unless I don't plug it in, which, you know, I will actually sometimes go 3-4 days without charging them just to kind of drain the batteries down a bit. And even at that, you know, I've been far from ever running them dead, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild what's available out there for technology now. And it's like, how far do you really want to go? How much do you really want to spend?
Man, the thing is, like, I already have no money, so what do I got to lose? I might as well just go all out and get the most expensive I can, because I'm already just, you know, barely paying for it anyways.
You got one, you know, we live in it, right? That's basically our house for 7 months a year. You might as well be proud of it.
Can't fish out of a house, but you can sleep in your boat.
Yeah.
So, no, that's cool. I really hadn't looked into the new Hummingbirds much, just because I know I'm not going to be re-rigging my boat with all the units or anything. But now, just as you, when you were talking about it here, I'm pulling them up, and pretty cool. Hopefully they work smoothly and everything. There's a lot of cool stuff here.
Well, the nice thing is too, like, you can, you know, they're Etherneted together, so you can literally, if you got, you know, the Mega Live running up on front, you can watch what he's watching up front in the back, and, you know, vice versa. You can watch, they're all, whatever screen you want to watch, you can have every screen in your boat looking at that
you know,
desired screen, right? So everybody can be on the same page and know what's going on in the boat. And it's nice too. Like I never used to run a front troll or a front graph in my boat. And, just because I really didn't care what the clients thought, right?
Yeah.
And, now I started the last boat, I put a graph up front, and, it seems to, you know, people kind of like to know, especially like I have it on one, you know, a split screen just on like 2D and GPS, so they can kind of get an idea how deep of water we're sitting in. And then they can see as I'm running the spot, like generally I have either an old trail I'm running or I have it waypointed out. So like when I actually drop my waypoints for like my musky spots, if I'm fishing a reef or a rock bar, I don't run up on the rock bar and drop a waypoint. I drop a waypoint like every 40 feet around the spot, and I just connect the dots, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so people can kind of get an idea when they're casting, instead of, you know, if they don't know how the structure lays, well, you know, a lot of people have a lot of a wasted cast, especially when you get to the tip of the bar and you start to round the corner. You know, I always tell people cast it, you know, 10, 15 degrees ahead of the boat. Well, as I start to round the corner, they can look down to see I'm rounding the corner. Well, they know, okay, automatically now without me having to tell them, they know, okay, I can make a cast back to hit the tip of the bar versus making that cast out ahead of the boat. And then I'm having to wait for them to get their bait in to turn the boat, and they're not wasting a cast, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I always liked having a bow, you know, like using the bow transducer on the trolling motor was like, even though, you know, we're talking about muskies mostly here, but when you're fishing for walleyes or crappies or something like that, being able to see the front, the transducer on the trolling motor and the transducer on the transom both, and the depth change between the two. Like for example, when I was crappie fishing in the fall, I would be, you know, coming in towards a point and it's flat mud, just all the way in. And all of a sudden, as I got closer to the point, I could watch that front graph, the bottom start coming up. And as soon as I got to where like the bow would be about 4 feet shallower than the transom, that's where I'd throw it in reverse, stop right there, hit the spot lock, and like you're sitting right on that first ledge coming out of the mud. And that was how I always found the crappies, you know, early on.
Yeah.
And without having a brush pile or something down there, that was the ticket. And without being able to see both ends of the boat. Now, you know, my boat being 24 feet long, it's crazy like how much difference there is sometimes. Oh.
Well, and two, like, what, like fishing eagle, I don't necessarily need it as much, but like having that screen up front on the trolling motor, like on the transducer trolling motor, and having one in the transom that I can see in the back, like when I'm fishing like a new body of water and stuff I've never fished,
I
rely on that trolling motor, you know, the graph up front to see.
They're not doing the trolling motor grind.
Well, that, or you're not burning anything, right? Because by the time you see it at the transom, I'm already 20 feet up on the bar or on the point or on the, or whatever it may be. So at least then it gives me, you know, 20 feet of kind of leeway. Okay. It's starting to rise up. Okay. I need to back off here a little bit and hang a right or hang a left to get back off the edge. And then, you know, go a little bit and start trying to turn again. Oh, it's starting to come. Okay. The bar is still running out, right? You're not burning the tip and, you know, or the, you know, the end of the bar or whatever it may be. And well, as you know, that's where, you know, high percentage areas where those fish are going to be sitting are at the very, very end of the structure where it dumps off into deep water, right?
The G spot.
There you go. You got it.
Yeah, I know that, you know, I started out not having anything up on the bow. And then, you know, by the time I finally got, a graph to use that transducer on the trolling motor, there was no skeg left on my trolling motor. I had ground it off.
Well, Lake of the Woods is, she's hungry. She loves to grind on stuff. I remember before I was running it, I was actually in Miles Bay pre-fishing for that Nestor Falls Cup, and we found this rock out in the middle, and you know those rocks out there, they're black, you cannot see them. I got my boat stuck on the rock, like I actually was on the rock. I had to get out, roll up my pants, and try and push my boat off the rock because I was so stuck on it.
Oh, I've been there, man. I've been there with
those rocks are slippery too.
Deathly slippery. Yeah, yeah. I was with the guy that actually owned the boat. I started guiding in, and I had been out with clients earlier that day and had some good activity on this in this one bay. Well, then as I was leaving the bay with the clients, I ran up on one of those rocks just like you're talking about, and it and as that evening I'm back out with the guy who owns the boat, and I said, yeah, when I was here earlier today we got stuck on top of a rock right around here, and just after I got done saying clunk, clunk, you know, the boat went up on the rock, and same thing, and the front of the boat was 8 feet deep, the back of the boat was 8 feet deep, and we were right on top in the middle.
Yeah.
Had to get in the water and do the little doggy paddle to get us out of there, so it was embarrassing for the guy that, you know, for taking the guy out that owned the boat, you know, not too impressed.
Oh, the stuff that you live and learn.
Man, those were the days, you know, learning every day, learning when to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, it's crazy. Before GPS and all that stuff, most of the good spots I found is because I hit it in some way, shape, or form.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely hit a lot, whether I was on step or off step, I hit a lot of stuff those first few years.
Yeah.
I didn't have a skeg on my big motor or my trolling motor.
Oh, shit.
But, yeah, it's, you know, I hadn't hit a rock in a long time, and then just, not last season, but the season before, I ended up hitting two, and knew about one of them. The other one, not so much, but, you know, I was overdue for it, so.
That was right. It's never a good feeling when the old lower unit's missing or the prop's gone.
Luckily, I've actually never had it happen to that extent to where, like, I couldn't get back. I thought that was going to be the case with the first one I hit that season. I was kind of running scared from this lightning storm after sunset or right around sunset. And I just smoked that thing, man. The whole motor popped up out of the water when I hit it, and I thought for sure I was going to trim that thing up and come back and look at nothing under the cavitation plate, but it was all still there. And I, you know, put the motor back down and put the throttle right back down to the nuts and hightailed it in, because that was a pretty nasty one we were running from there. But it, I'm lucky that cause I don't have a kicker motor on this boat that I run now.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that's right.
It would be a bad deal to knock that low.
Honestly, that's the only reason why I put a kicker on, just in case. I used to do a lot of trolling, and just the way we fish now with, you know, you got forward facing sonar and, you know, the mapping and all this and that, trolling just really isn't something that a guy does much anymore. And I just always feel the need to have a kicker on the back of my boat, but I don't think I fired it up once last year.
Yeah. That was always the thing, is like, October rolls around and now you finally got to get that kicker running that's been bouncing around on the back of your boat all season. And
yeah,
but yeah, it is funny how trolling is a thing of the, I quit trolling a while back, but I had finally really gotten dialed on trolling. Felt like, well, I definitely had the best season I had ever had in the fall trolling, and just, never trolled again after that. Like, started fishing more rubber stuff all the way through till freeze up. And, you know, I never really was the biggest fan of trolling anyways, but I didn't know how to catch them otherwise. And in the fall, but all you got to do is start trying, and it worked out.
Yeah. But, yeah, well, we'll kind of probably meet up here again in a few weeks. We're kind of getting closer and closer to musky season here. And once we get some snow starts to melt, I'll finally start to get the itch a little bit more. I was actually down in the basement just the other day, and I was looking at my whole basement as just this giant, massive room of musky baits, and they're just like in piles and crates and boxes and buckets, and like my box is still like from the last day of fishing, baits are just crammed in it, and I need to actually get serious here and start getting stuff put back together and get ready for the spring here, and and all that. But until some snow melts, we get some grass starting to pop, I'm going to be pretty busy still out on the ice fishing here. Got probably 3 more weeks of everyday fishing here. And then by then I'll probably be had enough of it, even though the way the ice looks here, I mean, shit, we probably still have on most lakes, we probably still have 40 inches of ice, I want to say.
Yeah, it's been a few years since we've had this much ice. You know, almost forgot how much a pain in the ass the auger is with an extension on it.
Yeah. So, but then I'll start thinking more, you know, musky. I actually just got a bunch of baits in the mail here. Got some couple new prototypes from Savage that we're working on for next season that I got to start playing with. And got some of the new stuff that's going to be released this spring. That topwater and that crankbait, that's going to be, those are going to be some really, that crankbait's going to be an absolute killer. So getting that, getting those put in the boxes, getting them unwrapped here and getting all that stuff dialed in. But, yeah, we're slowly getting there, Joe, slowly.
It's coming. They can't stop it.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead and, you know, I'll just throw my phone number out for guys looking to try and get on Lake of the Woods. I still got some open days and you can get a hold of me 218-280-3734 and book some trips. Or shoot me an email, joecooper89@gmail.com, and we'll figure out a good time to come up and get in the boat. So, I'm looking forward to this season and still got to finish this one out. Still got a ways to finish this one out, though. But yeah. I'm ready to start booking trips for this summer. So,
cool.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, we'll reconvene with something new and exciting to talk about here. We got a couple ideas that we actually there's some pretty potentially big changes around my neck of the woods that might be coming up with Eagle Lake and the fishery itself. That it's an evolving type deal here. We got some meetings regarding it. That's gonna might be some big news here coming up, and something to really dive real deep into about here for the next meeting. We'll see everybody's thoughts and let them express their concerns, and might be able to relay that back to you here, and we'll go from there. So,
sounds exciting, man.